Christian Parenting.
This is Be Love, Do Good Podcast, and I'm your host, Christy Hayes, mama to two, founder of Be Strong Story, and author of the children's book, The Lunchbox Note, a true story of how a lunchbox note that said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone, changed our life, and created a mission for our family. Join us each week for conversations that inspire our families to live out true compassion, kindness, and what it looks like to be love and do good in our communities. It may take us out of our comfort zones, you guys, but I promise it will put us on a path to see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Hey everyone, welcome to Be Love, Do Good Podcast. I'm your host, Christy Hayes. Today I have one of our favorite guests on, and that is Max Licato. Max is a pastor, a speaker, the best-selling author with more than 145 million products in print. Many of you know Max Licato. You have read his books for years and years and years, and he has been truly a voice in your mind when it comes to treating others, how to love God well. And I have had the opportunity and the privilege to interview him once before, and now I get to interview him again about his new book that is coming out, God Never Gives Up on You. It comes out in September. And it's this whole story. He takes the story of Jacob and teaches us about grace, mercy, and God's relentless love. I'm telling you, here's what I love about Max. Max is one of the most famous Christian authors in the nation. And the more famous he gets, the more gracious and generous he is. And I want to tell you that I interview a ton of people on here. Most of them are lovely. But with human nature, when we get more celebrity or more famous, sometimes we lose the presence, we lose the generosity and kindness, and we're too busy for our other things. And I'm telling you right now, Max Licato, we always joke, be like Max. Max is the most gracious and generous person. No matter how successful he is or gets, he makes you feel like you're the only person in the room, and he truly is present and just loves Jesus. So if you haven't listened to my other interview with Max, please do, and then also listen to this one, because he is just, I love him because he's so vulnerable, and you'll probably hear some things on here you didn't know about his story. And so I just love interviewing him and count it as a privilege. Please enjoy my interview with Max. Hey, Max, thanks so much for being on our Be Love, Do Good podcast. Again, this is your second time. I feel so honored that you guys have been on here twice. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Are you doing okay?
I'm doing good. We both were coming in hot from an interview, me from two meetings. So this is just a space for me personally just to soak it in. And I love just talking to you. I feel like it's a masterclass every time that I get to talk to you about Jesus. We were laughing earlier. Jana, who's your publicist, and I think has been your publicist for a long time, we were joking the day before. I said, I just want to be like Max. I said, every time that he comes on, he's so gracious and grace-filled. And so my one first question before we talk about your book that's all about grace is, why do you think, so here's my question, in a leadership role, we obviously have to have the fine line of being gracious and also, you know, having high expectations for different things. But every time I think of something in my life, leadership role, I really do come back to how would Jesus's grace cover the people I'm talking to? And then I really do think of you, of just every time I talk to you, everything I read of you is always grace, grace, grace. So tell me a little bit of how you keep that front and center and have been doing this grace-filled life for a long time.
Well, you know, the problem with that question is you're assuming that I really do that.
You do.
That's a struggle. And I do have an advantage in that I'm an old converted drunk. And so I know where my life was headed. I know where those railroad tracks would have taken me. And so that comes to my mind quite often. I do not think I would ever want any girl to go out with the 20-year-old version of Max Lucado. And so to think what God kept me from, the life he kept me from, is just a wonderful, wonderful reminder that grace has saved me, but it's also excited me. And so I've had that advantage. Maybe being a bad sinner has its advantages, because it's made me appreciate very much the wonderful forgiveness of God that we have. You know, people tell me they have a hard time trusting God's grace, but I was at the point in my life where I had no plan B. If I didn't trust God's grace, I was such a profligate that I don't know what I would have done. So I'm very daily grateful for God's second chances. And to be quite honest, I'm really excited about heaven. I'm just really, the older I get, the more energized I am about what's, you know, what's about to happen. You know, when our hero Tim Keller passed away earlier in the year, the message reported that he said to his family, "There is no downside to this death." That's a beautiful statement. For the Christian, there's no downside to death. There's just not. We have lived the life we were supposed to live according to the number of days we were ordained to live. And we were covered by God's grace throughout that life, and we're ushered into the presence of Christ. And there's no downside to that.
I love that. That eternal perspective. I think it's something that I miss sometimes when I get so stressed about something. And I think it's also such a beautiful thing to be able to share that with our kiddos, you know, when they're scared about things, and this eternal perspective. How have you been able to do that for your kids, helping them, first of all, parent with grace? Because that's, I have two tween and a teen who are lovely, but how did you parent with grace, and then how did you help your kids have that eternal perspective when they were facing really hard circumstances?
I think a key answer to that question is to help our kids understand the brevity of life. The length of life is what they feel. They just think it'll be forever until I'm as old as my grandparents, you know. But truly, the brevity of life is what the scripture relates. And so I was using that to help my children when they would pass through hard times. Because the Apostle Paul talked about even the struggles of life. He called them these brief and momentary struggles. You know, they're brief in comparison to eternity. They're momentary. So to teach our children, these things do pass. Life is very short. No problem lasts forever. You will get through this. Initially, that's a challenge, because they feel like they won't, you know. They feel like they'll never make friends, or they feel like they'll never get over this breakup. And so the truth is they will, but that just comes with experience. Mm-hmm. I think our job as parents is to put in words for them the lessons that they will later learn. So when they learn them, they'll say, "Oh, Mom told me this." Yeah.
Right, okay. Right. I remember that.
Yeah, I remember. She told me I'd make it through. Here I am. I've got another boyfriend. I don't even think about that old guy anymore. She was right. So little by little, they begin to see that these discoveries of wisdom were truly gifts from their parents, and in turn, gifts from God. So I think start right there, you know, help our kids see the brevity of life, and these problems really don't last that long.
I love it. I read your book in one day, God Never Gives Up on You. And tell me a little bit about why you wrote this book, and who is this book for? Why was this so important for you to write?
Jed Jacob has always been a character that has fascinated me. I think of all the characters in the Old Testament, especially the major characters, not a whole lot is written about Jacob. Tons of books on Moses, Abraham, Daniel, Joseph. Look up the books on Jacob. Not so many. There's some good ones, but not so many, and not nearly as many. And that intrigued me. And I think part of the answer is we don't quite know what to do with the guy. There's really nothing he does that's spiritually noteworthy. He never preaches a sermon. If he wrote anything, we don't have anything to read. There's no there's aside from wrestling with the stranger in the mud of Jabbok, there's not really any miracle. I mean, no Red Sea openings or anything like that. So we don't quite know what to do with him. And I find that to be the charming part of Jacob's life. He is the everyday guy. He is the every person. He's the person who struggles. He's the person who tries to manipulate the system to fit his needs. He's high on ambition and low on conscience. He stumbles really more than he stands. But in the end, we look back over his life and see it was God who's the hero of Jacob, not Jacob, who deserved God's help. I think that describes all of us. Maybe some of us more than others, but all of us. And so that's what intrigued me about the life of Jacob. I hope you enjoyed the book. I loved writing it. I loved reading about Jacob. And I think his story deserves a lot of reflection and retelling.
I loved it. I want to read you a passage that made me cry on the porch, so I hope it doesn't make me cry now, which it probably will. It says, "You've had or will have moments of deep despair. You've had or you will have hours in which your eyes weep a river and your heart breaks into a thousand pieces. You've had or you will have journeys through dry, barren stretches that will leave you exhausted and isolated. You will feel stripped of all you cherish. You will look around and see no one to comfort you. You will search for strength, but you will search in vain, for strength will not come. Yet in that desolate moment, as you sit near the headstone and cry, on the barstool and drink, or in your bedroom and sigh, God will meet you. You will sense and see him as never before. Do not begrudge the barren stretches, for in the barrenness we encounter God. We find the presence of God." Can you tell me, sorry that I got all emotional there. People who know me know I get touched by different things, but I'd love to know, was there a moment for you where you felt this deep despair? I know there's a moment in the book that I love that you were so vulnerable with when life was great, or it looked great on the outside. You were successful. You had written all these books. You were America's pastor. Everyone was celebrating you. And yet, inside for you, you were feeling something different. Can you talk a little bit about that time in your life?
I was just turned 50 years old, and it was a heady time. The church was doing great. I was riding the crest of a lot of books, and there's this celebrity world that comes to Christians that I don't like. I don't like it at all. But at that point, I liked it, and I was reading my own press too often. What was under the surface, however, our staff at the church, largely due to my poor leadership, was struggling. There were camps, there was gossip, there were emails being fired back and forth. And I resented it. I resented that they couldn't get along. I resented that they were being mean to one another. After all, didn't they know they had a me as their pastor? Didn't they know I had deadlines to meet? I didn't have time to sort out problems. It was pathetic, my attitude. And then, to make matters worse, I mentioned earlier that I'm a converted drunk. And if I'm not careful, I'll still use alcohol to deal with my issues. And I did during that season. I made a practice of finding a convenience store far enough across town where people would not recognize me, at least I hoped. And I would buy one of those big beers, and I would put it in a brown paper bag, and I'd go out and I'd sit in my car in the convenience store parking lot at the end of the day. And the phrase that we often use is take the edge off, just kind of numb the day out. I don't have anything against alcohol and its appropriate use. I do have anything against any type of pain medication that's not from God. And that's what I was doing, is I was self-medicating. I was trying to deal with my problems without consulting God. And that's just terrible. It's just terrible. And so in that case, in Jacob's case, God met him in the desert. In my case, he met me in a parking lot. And he gave me a little talking to. I mean, I could sense it in my spirit. It was firm, but it was gracious and it was kind. And it was enough to get me, the wake up call. It was get back on track. And by God's grace, I have elders that allow me to be honest with them. And I was, and I shared even parts of the story with the church and moved on. But it could have been catastrophic. You know, it could have been really a disaster. But God met me right there. He did. Mm-hmm. He met me right there. And in the world, in our lives, we all have those moments. And those people who say they don't have those moments, I've got a great sermon on honesty. I'd love to send you. It just comes with life. You know, it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. What I urge the person to consider is that God is right there in that moment. He will not give up on you. You may take a wrong turn. You may go right when you should have gone left. He'll find you. He'll lead you back. I think that's a part of what it means to know and love a God of grace.
So as we kind of wrap up, and we have a lot of audience of parents, talk to me of how you would help them really experience grace in their own lives so that they can dole it out to their kids. Because what I've learned just on these podcasts where we talk about parenting and we talk about, you know, here are the three things you can do for your kids to help them love God. And if we're not doing it, usually it's a us problem. I always think like, well, my kids aren't doing this, or my kids aren't doing this. Well, am I forgiving people? Am I talking kindly to people? Am I getting out of my comfort zone and sharing Jesus with people? How can I expect them to do something that I am not doing? And so I'd love for you to just talk, put your parent hat on and talk to parents out there. For those who might have had a past, I think of some of my friends who maybe are still struggling in shame or receiving God's grace. And so it's really hard for them maybe to give grace to others. So talk me through that a little bit.
Yeah. You know, when you're on an airplane and they give those pre-flight instructions and they tell parents to put the oxygen mask on before you give it to your kids, there's a reason for that. And that is you can't help your kids if you're desperate. If you're gasping. And so put the oxygen mask on. Be kind to yourself. You know you're not a perfect parent, but there is no perfect parent. And Jesus always hears the prayers of parents. You're not perhaps parenting as well as you might have hoped, but I promise you, you're doing better than you think you are. Mm-hmm. Your attention to those kids, your kindness toward those kids, even your discipline of those kids, it'll pay off. It'll pay off. Sometimes it seems to take longer. I am absolutely convinced that my father thought he had a lost cause because I was disrespectful. I was disobedient. Mm-hmm. I was a scoundrel. And yet he had, in my early years, deposited seeds of kindness and steadiness and faithfulness. A man of few words, but a man of steady example. And in the times in which I needed a role model that I could look up to, I remembered him. I remembered him. Now, I neglected him for probably 4 or 5 years, but I remembered him. And so please don't underestimate just the power of presence, of just loving your kids. Receive God's grace first for yourself. Do your best to extend God's grace. God's grace never means no discipline. In fact, sometimes grace means we do discipline. Jacob got disciplined a bunch. But please be kind to yourself. And the story's not over yet. And God has a place, a special place for parents who pray.
I love it. Well, I'm so excited for people to get your book, God Never Gives Up on You. I have friends who already tried to take my book, and I said, no, you can't take it yet until I do my interview. But I think in this day and age, I work with a lot of kiddos. I work in an anti-trafficking organization, and some of the people that we meet feel as if they, you know, that God has given up. And so I love this, just this message for all of us, that no matter what, no matter how far we've gone, no matter what we've done, that God will always meet us and never gives up. So thank you so much for writing this. Thank you for living it.
Well, thank you. You're very, very kind. I look forward to an opportunity we have, and maybe we can talk longer.
Yes, that would be lovely.
A lot to unpack.
Next book comes out, and we live in Waco, so I always tell my husband, I'm like, we need to just go down to San Antonio and see Max at his church. So next time we get down that way, I'd love to do that.
Please give me a heads up so I can say hello to you.
Awesome. Thank you, Max. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Max Licato. I know I did. I encourage you to pre-order his book, God Never Gives Up on You. It is a beautiful story. I read it in one day. I also encourage you to follow Max on Instagram and Facebook. He has such just beautiful words of wisdom every day. And if you haven't read his other books, I encourage you to do that as well. He is just someone who points us always to Jesus and helps us have a gracious heart. So I encourage you this week to be like Max, because Max is like Jesus. Have a great day. Thanks for being love and doing good in your family, in your community. See you next week.